From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel. It was 40 years ago today that Sgt. Pepper taught the world that rock and roll could be more than four chords and a dance beat. The Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band was released on June 1, 1967 in the UK and a day later here in the US. Reporter Paul Ingalls reminds us what an event that was.
It was the last week in May. 17-year-old Leslie Samuels Healy just got her driver's license and was trying to be careful as she rolled through Park Avenue traffic in Manhattan to pick up her mother. As usual, she was flipping between AM stations.
I think it was WMCA Radio in New York. First and exclusive, we have the new Sgt. Pepper album. I picked up my mom. I said, "Be quiet, don't say a word. I will drive safely, but I'm listening to this." If you're not comfortable, take a cab, I'll get home.
Like millions of fans, Healy had been waiting 10 months for a new Beatles album. Not a long wait these days, but in the mid-1960s, U.S. fans had been getting a new album from the band almost every 3 months, and many saw them perform every summer.
We'd like to sing... We'd like to sing a song now. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Fans who saw the Beatles on their summer 1966 tour did not know it would be their last. Paul McCartney told the British press later that year that the Beatles were fed up with touring.
It's gone downhill performance. If we're not listened to, then and we can't even hear ourselves, then we can't improve.
At EMI Studios in London, McCartney and bandmates John Lennon, George Harrison, and Ringo Starr met with producer George Martin and engineers Jeff Emmerich and Phil McDonald to tell them they were giving up the road. Howard Massey co-wrote Jeff Emmerich's recent memoir.
Jeff had a very clear memory, as did Phil McDonald, of everyone gathering around the console in the control room, and John very excitedly explaining to George Martin that they were going to go for something really completely different with this album because they were no longer constrained by having to think in terms of playing any of these songs live anymore.
Have the mic on the piano quite low. Just keeping it like maracas, you know. You know those old pianos.
Instead of knocking out a new song in just a few days, the Beatles spent weeks layering ever more intricate soundscapes over their songs and making their fans wait and wait. DJ Bruce Morrow, cousin Brucey to his listeners, was on 7 to 11 at night on WABC AM in New York at the time.
We were a little worried. There was no product. There was no Beatle record. The Beatle maniacs were getting very worried, and the guys on the air, like your cousin Brucey, where are my Beatles?
Let me take you down.
In February 1967, the first of the Beatles' studio-only creations came out as a single, Strawberry Fields Forever, backed by Penny Lane. When the Sgt. Pepper album arrived at radio stations, neither song was on it. In fact, the LP was released without any singles. Since singles were all that top 40 stations played then, DJ Bruce Morrow says AM was forced to play album cuts. But not all of them.
We, in those days, we were very paranoid about the FCC and about the government, the Justice Department coming down on, quote, drug-related lyrics. I mean, we were so crazy, we couldn't play with a little help from my friends.
The songs AM radio was afraid to play could still be found on the air in some cities, though. More young listeners, like Pete Fornatel, a college student in 67, heard the rest of Sgt. Pepper on the then lowly FM band.
The commercial FM station in New York, which was WOR-FM, started playing A Day in the Life.
I read the news today, oh boy.
And, you know, that song has been a part of our lives for 40 years now, but try to think what it was like hearing that for the first time. It was a mind blower.
Fornatel was a DJ too, already playing rock album cuts for his college station, Fordham University's WFUV. In some ways, college radio was leading the way. At the time, commercial FM was primarily the poor stepsister of AM. Few people had FM receivers, so station owners simply simulcast their AM signals. When the FCC told them to stop in 1966, they were still unconvinced that FM could make money, so they just let their FM DJs play whatever they wanted.
So what do you say we join the Beatles and let's work on our hits?
Sgt. Pepper obviously lent itself to that.
Rolling Stone magazine's Anthony DeCurtis grew up in New York and had made the shift from AM to FM.
I very specifically remember a late-night DJ in New York playing Fixing a Hole on the radio and just reading the lyrics.
The Beatles, Fixing a Hole, where the rain gets in and stops their mind from wandering. I guess maybe having your mind wander is good.
Those were the kinds of experiences that you can have and that FM radio in its burgeoning format made possible, that Sgt. Pepper made possible. It was a kind of perfect storm of cultural events.
FM radio became the medium where new rock music was presented and discussed in a serious way. And at home, people listened to this album differently. Howard Massey was 14 when he sat down with a friend to hear it for the first time.
I think we played the entire album all the way through three or four times before either of us spoke to each other and started discussing it. I'd never had that experience with any album ever before. It wasn't a collection of songs. The effect as a whole was you felt as if you'd been on some incredible journey.
Picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies.
And fans got to go deeper into the journey, following along with the lyrics, which were printed on a Beatles album for the first time. And that album jacket, with over 70 historical figures crowded together, became the topic of much analysis and discussion. It's a discussion that hasn't stopped in the ensuing 40 years. Critics both praise Pepper for ushering in an era of thoughtful rock and blast it for inspiring a host of pretentious excursions by other bands. And some, like Jim Fusilli, who writes about music for the Wall Street Journal, feel too much weight has been placed on Sgt. Pepper's shoulders.
If the question is, does Sgt. Pepper matter? You know, it matters like The Simpsons matter, or it matters like chocolate chip mint ice cream matters. Our life might be diminished without it, but I don't believe many lives have been saved by Sgt. Pepper. I just think it's a terrific rock album, and it's stood up very well over the years. Whether it will continue to stand up when all of us who were alive in 1967 are gone remains to be seen.
Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band was certified gold within 2 weeks of its release. Today, it's number 53 on the recording industry's bestseller list. Ahead of it, two Backstreet Boys albums, Britney Spears, and Kenny G. For NPR News, I'm Paul Ingles.
You can hear more music from Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band at our website, npr.org. And while we're on the subject of anniversaries, it was 11 years and 6 months ago today that Sarah Sarrison joined our staff, and since then she has done just about every job on this program. Today is her last day with us, and we want to say goodbye, Sarah, and thank you. You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.